Welcome to episode 28 of Marooners Talk. We'll go ahead and call this one Avengers Assemble. We'll be discussing the Avengers movie today. If you haven't seen it yet, there will be multiple spoilers throughout. So you may want to stop listening and go watch it right away because it's that good.
Yeah, and that being said, this week should be a lot better than last week because Adam's actually here.
Yeah.
Thanks Woo-hoo. For showing up. Jerk.
Oh, yeah, because I didn't have anything important to do.
No.
Whatever, dude. College,
sorry, no, I
really
would like
whatever.
That.
Whatever. I've seen like hundreds about, of them.
Did you listen to last week's episode?
Yes.
Did you listen to the end of last week's episode?
How far in the end?
The entire,
I haven't finished. I've got 5 or 10 minutes left because I haven't been driving that much. I've been listening to my car, so.
Oh, okay, that should be fun then.
Hulk's a podcast.
I don't even remember what happened at the end of that podcast. I mean, I just kind of blocked it all out because I'm like, this is terrible. This is terrible. It's just me and Chris talking about something we like. This is terrible.
Oh, yeah, thanks. No, I think the last 5 minutes we were talking shit about Adam.
Oh. Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, so. Have fun.
See, I'll probably find them. I'll find it amazing.
Yeah,
but you know, like as soon as like one weekend, I'm going to be doing something, and you know, Adam's going to get his chance to talk shit about me.
Absolutely.
Oh.
Okay, let's get this party started proper.
I mean, not that there isn't ample shit to talk about either one of us, but
I was going to say, I think shit talking is a good way to get the party started. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So
we've all seen the Avengers.
I gotta say, my favorite part was at the end when the Silver Surfer showed up and he sucker punched the Hulk, and then was all like, "Galactus is coming." Oh, oh no, that's what I told Lindsay happened at the end.
Oh, is that what you actually told her?
Yeah,
she didn't. I didn't experience any of her raging out about your fake spoilers to her.
Well, that's probably because she realized that I wasn't actually going to spoil the movie for her because I'm not her.
Probably.
And also, Fox owns the Silver Surfer.
So?
No, it's like one of those weird legal loopholes. That's why they can't have Spider-Man or the X-Men or the Fantastic Four cameo in the Avengers movies. Because of the movie rights that were set in place before Marvel Studios came about.
Well, let's be honest. If this movie got any bigger than the Avengers that were there right now, it would be unmanageable.
It would be cool if, you know, one of the end credit sequences would have been Nick Fury showing up at a high school and saying, "Hey, I need to talk to Peter Parker." That could have been cool. But
again, like I said, the legal loophole.
Yeah, exactly. What? That's sad.
There's actually one reason that a lot of fanboys are hoping other Marvel movies fail. It's because they hope the rights revert back to Marvel Studios. And all I'm thinking is, if the movies fail, that just means no one will make a movie, period. Again.
No, it just means that they'll hand the reins over to Pixar, who just makes, you know, gold.
I debate Pixar's greatness.
With the exception of Cars, every movie that they have made has been a huge financial success and takes top box office honors on its opening weekend.
And it's been a critical successes too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Oscar
and then look
winners
at,
and yeah.
And with the exception of the Avengers, the best superhero movie in my opinion is The Incredibles.
Oh,
made
absolutely.
By Pixar.
Oh, hands down, 100%.
I mean, that movie is a hair shy of perfect.
Well, I mean, The Incredibles is what
the Fantastic Four
movies should have been.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it really highlighted the family dynamic of them being a family first and superheroes as a secondary kind of ability.
Actually, funny fact, when they were making a Fantastic Four movie, they filmed some scenes, and then they went to a screening of The Incredibles, and they're like, oh, crap, because a lot of scenes that were in The Incredibles were stuff that they were filming and doing for Fantastic Four. Like, great, we got to cut that out. We got to cut that out.
Hmm.
It's like, The Incredibles was an awesome movie, but it kind of shafted the Fantastic Four movie a little bit because they couldn't do some scenes.
Let's be honest. The Fantastic Four movie shafted itself. I mean, come on.
Both of them.
Yeah, they were pretty awful, and I have a really low bar for superhero movies.
Well, let's be honest. Rise of the Silver Surfer, whatever the hell they called the second one, would have been better if they had gotten Samuel L. Jackson to voice the Silver Surfer instead of Lawrence Fishburne. That would have saved that movie.
Fishburne was perfect.
No, Fishburne was, but I really wanted to see a Silver Surfer just be like, I'm sick and tired of these Galactus clouds and my motherfucking Earth system. You know, like, come on.
I still think David Hasselhoff should have shown up in the Avengers just because he was the original Nick Fury. Come on now.
And didn't Dolph Lundgren do a Nick Fury also?
No, he did the
Punisher. No, he was the Punisher.
Oh, Punisher.
And then, what was it, J.D. Salinger's kid who played Captain America?
Really?
Yes.
One? Because there's two bad Captain America things out there. The flop movie and the TV movie with Reb Brown.
Yeah, I have the old movie version.
Yeah. Oh, but speaking of the classic people who played various superheroes, at the AMC theaters I went to, they had the big Ultimate Movie Marathon thing. And in between the movies, they were doing this little trivia contest. And the first question that they asked was what five actors have portrayed the Incredible Hulk over the years. And as soon as it said five actors, Incredible Hulk, it's like my hand instantly went up. They called me and I'm like, Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, Eric Bana, Ed Norton, and Mark Ruffalo. And bam, I won an Iron Man toy.
Nice.
It was nice. Bixby didn't play the Hulk.
Well, you know what? Neither did Norton, Ruffalo, or Bana. And if you want to get real technical, you can add Ang Lee to that list because he did a whole bunch of the motion capture in his Hulk.
Norton did the motion capture for his Hulk, so you know he at least counts.
But either way.
I will say that going into it, I was really hesitant about Mark Ruffalo as Banner and the Hulk because I'm not a big Ruffalo fan, and I thought Edward Norton actually did a really good job of it. But
yeah, I know. I was in the same boat.
He did a good Banner, and he didn't have to do much for a Hulk, but he did a really good Banner.
He did a large portion of the motion capture for the Hulk, though. Mm-hmm.
Oh, he did that well, too, then.
I think that's what made the Hulk so impressive this time around was because he had real emotion. Like, he kind of felt like a real character. I thought the Hulk was great.
Mm-hmm. The other thing was that most of the time when we do Hulk movies or we see Hulk movies, they always rehash the same thing. He's on the run. He's on the run. Half the time, his heroics are very accidental or last resort kind of heroics. This movie, it's, you know, he's actually, you know, taking charge of trying to be a hero, and that's part of what made it so awesome. This is a more unified Hulk, at least.
They're making a step towards it, which they end, you know, I mean, that's how they ended The Incredible Hulk, was making that step towards the unified Hulk. And I'm sure whenever the next one we get to, we're going to see a bit more intelligence in the Hulk and maybe a bit more brutishness in Banner.
So. Yeah, hopefully, if they keep their word and actually go on with a Hulk sequel now that the Avengers has done so well.
Ruffalo signed for 6 Hulk appearance or Hulk films now. He did that deal, so probably 2 or 3 Avenger sequels and then a couple Hulk movies. So, yeah, they locked him down to do it, which I think is great.
Man, it's gonna be nuts how they're gonna have to build up for Avengers 2.
Actually, yeah, the parent phase, the first part of, they're calling this, according to Marvel, they're calling this phase, phase 1, the climax of which is Avengers, and then phase 2 is going to start with Iron Man 3 and work its way through new sequels and new Avengers heroes, and then work its way to Avengers 2.
Yeah.
I say for Avengers 2, bring on the Masters of Evil. Let's just get all the villains from the previous movies and just bring them in. I'm convinced Red Skull's somewhere in space right now.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the thing. Is Loki was a great first villain because he could go toe-to-toe with everyone individually.
Mm-hmm. And he was the first villain the Avengers fought anyway in the first comic.
Yeah. But, I mean, leaving that aside, I mean, it's just, with the tease of Thanos, you need someone who's individually more powerful or on equal playing field with everyone in the team, with the exception of Hulk, because that's unfair because he has an infinite source of power.
And someone that's not brutish, too. You want
exactly.
Loki was so good because Joss Whedon is incredible at crafting villains that are intelligent mm-hmm. and that
and
are sort of diabolical.
And on top of that, he's great at managing large casts of interesting and unique characters.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
yeah,
he's really good at building those character relationships and dynamics. That's what his real strength is building.
What do you expect? He came from Pixar, you know? I mean, that is Pixar's strength. Like, that's the thing I'm looking forward to with this whole Marvel Disney thing, is that now Marvel has access to those people.
I was more impressed by Loki because he was such a one-dimensional villain in the Thor movie. I liked him. I thought he was really cool, but he wasn't as compelling. And in this one, he was just off the rails, insane and brilliant. And just, he was great at being menacing and creepy. And I don't know. I thought Loki stole the show in the whole movie.
Well, and he was also a recent villain that's still going to be in the minds of moviegoers who aren't as invested, I guess, in going anyway. So you have, oh yeah, you know, I remember him in Thor last year, or was it last year or the year before?
Yeah, it was last year.
I actually like the fact that every few seconds you see that moment where Thor is trying to get through to him throughout the whole movie, and he has that moment where he recognizes his brother's intent, but at the same time, he's gone batshit loony.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the great thing about the dynamic that they built in Thor that got carried over, and again, with Whedon's ability to craft and build these believable characters, then also one of the huge strengths of Kenneth Branagh, you know, with his very extensive Shakespearean training and understanding those very complex relationships, is that, you know, despite it all, Thor and Loki are still brothers, and Thor still loves him.
As much as you can love someone you routinely beat with a hammer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's just Thor's kind of brutish way of trying to save him. I mean, it's just, when it all comes down to it, all these characters are comic book characters, and especially through that whole might makes right idea, they're all kind of this fascist ideal, strangely enough.
Well, and he makes a comment on that, Thor himself does, while he's standing on S.H.I.E.L.D.'s headquarters as it's floating in space. Yeah, the helicarrier. And he's saying, you know, I used to think that humans were the brutish ones, and then I look at us Asgardians, and we're Asgardians, sorry, not Asgardians.
That's a podcast for another day.
And, you know, we come in here and we cause all this devastation, and so they commented on it, and I thought that was clever.
Yeah.
And then the thing that, one of the things that play into that, the fact that once the mission's done, the Avengers just go their own way. Like, you know, they don't need to stay together and exert their power. They just go their own way and just will come back when they're needed.
And now they can, they've already established each of the characters in the group dynamic, and using Loki as a villain, he was already established. They didn't have to spend the movie building him up. Now the next movie could be about Thanos or be about whoever they bring in as the big bad, and then they can really, they can have someone new, so they're not, they can introduce the audience to them.
Well, I was texting with Tom right after we got out of the movie today.
I was walking to the theater to see it again.
Yeah, and I, you know, just saw the Thanos bit and looking forward to seeing him. And well, your idea was that they'll probably bring him in Thor 2 to get the Infinity Gauntlet from Odin.
Yeah, that's right.
It makes the most sense, too. And also, I mean, that bit there at the beginning, or towards the beginning, where his lieutenant is all like, you know, if you fail us, there's nowhere you can hide, you know, from, you know, Thanos' revenge. And I mean, so, I mean, Loki's getting carted back to Asgard, so I imagine that Thor 2 is, if they continue on, like, if they're sitting down and they're planning all these movies out based on all of the stuff which they should be doing, you know, we should be seeing Loki get imprisoned in the room with no doors, and then Thanos being all like, well, I need this Infinity Gauntlet, you guys have it. Oh, and by the way, you're also holding this person who failed me, and I really kind of want to, like, you know, fuck him up for that.
Well, the funny thing is, already they're talking about what the plot line might be for Thor 2. And apparently they're going to bring back in Jane Foster, and they're going to explore more of the other parts of the Nine Realms. So we might see Surtur and the things from Muspelheim. We might see Hel and her minions from Death.
I hope they keep Thanos as a real nihilist, though.
Oh, absolutely they are. As soon as we were in the mid-credits ending, and he's sitting there, and he says, you know, to wage war against the humans would be to court death, it instantly clicked for me, because...
And he smiles.
You know, Thanos' great love and everything he does is to catch the attention and affection of death.
Right, which is... I really think that they're going to go dark with him and not kind of make him a campy... just real powerful space guy, would be fantastic.
Well, it's like, just, when you think about it, he's kind of like the Marvel version of Darkseid.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like how Deadpool was like the really campy version of Deathstroke.
I'm sorry, I think you mean really awesome, better, and completely, totally, awesomely better version.
I think they're completely different, and I think that they're both awesome in their own ways. But, you know, Thanos is that, you know, he is the reflection of Darkseid in a way, and unlike Deadpool, he didn't go in a completely different direction. He is very much that, I want to just destroy everything because.
Mm.
I hope they don't do him like they did in the Silver Surfer cartoon. That was creepy.
Well, and that's what I was worried about, yeah.
Yeah, like, kind of way too kinky about his obsession with death.
I want him to have a major hard-on for death, because that's who Thanos is.
I know, but there's a line of how far you can take a kinkiness it just becomes a little much.
Would you say it's a thick white line? I'm sorry, never mind. Go ahead.
Go to the corner.
I think that there is definitely there's a bit of a misunderstanding, I think, between what Chris is meaning by like his, you know, thing for death, and Ahmed is thinking, and yeah. So how about the Mets? I completely derailed.
I'm just saying, because I've seen Thanos done before in animation with a Silver Surfer cartoon, and it was not flattering to his character. I mean,
well, that doesn't matter, because that's owned by Fox, annoying. So we can throw all that out the door.
I know, but you get my point. It's like, I don't want people to make the wrong, because it takes one bad characterization to screw up a really classic character.
But Marvel's been so picture perfect, and that's why I thought Avengers was really impressive again, was because each of those characters was spot on. I mean, yeah, they were just perfect. And they remained true to the movie counterparts, too. Like, none of them drastically changed who they were into this film, which was obviously a danger. So,
yeah.
I trust them with the characters.
I love the fact that I love this model that Marvel has created for these movies by basically having everyone get their solo thing so they can get the development, get the thing, and also come in for the Avengers and have that group dynamic. And I'm just looking forward to seeing if DC takes a cue from this and actually starts seriously working towards a Justice League movie.
They won't.
There's no way, because they could never get Batman in.
They can't get Bale's Batman, which is fine, because that Batman doesn't work in the large DC universe. Like,
I mean, he works within his universe, but he does not work if you put him next to Superman.
And you couldn't put in a different Batman, like from a. You just couldn't do it. So,
well, no. Here's the thing that DC needs to do is they need to scrap whatever the hell they're doing with Man of Steel. Just throw it out.
Yeah.
Just be like Warner, whatever. Just write off all that money, because I guarantee you it's probably going to be terrible. They need to throw out what happened with Green Lantern, because if that wasn't good enough, like, it was okay.
The director's cut was much better than the theatrical.
Yeah. If they could have just waited 6 more months and taken, you know, 6 more months before shooting to just tweak the script a little bit and maybe buy some 3D cameras if they really cared about the 3D that much, and you know, actually just put a little more pre-production time into it, that movie could have been great. Because Ryan Reynolds, much as I dislike or like the guy, depending on the role, man, he really could have been a great Hal Jordan.
Yeah. What's really funny is Mike...
I never saw him as a good Hal Jordan, though, because of his tendency to be so flippant.
He would have been a better Kyle Rayner.
Yeah, I'd have seen him much more as a Kyle Rayner. Or, he doesn't have the look, but a Guy Gardner, just because of the attitude and the big mouth.
Yeah.
But bringing in my girlfriend watched Green Lantern the other night for the first time. She doesn't read Green Lantern. She was never a fan of him. And she actually enjoyed the movie. I mean, she saw the director's cut. So there's definitely potential there.
There's a director's cut?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the Blu-ray.
Huh.
It's
I'll check it out.
You mean the green ray?
Well, yeah, the box.
Go to the corner. Sorry. No,
they did the same thing they did with The Incredible Hulk, where the box is green and it looks terrible on my Blu-ray shelf. It just pisses me off.
You know what looks really good on my Blu-ray shelf right now?
Hmm.
My despecialized editions of the original Star Wars trilogy.
You know what looks great on my Blu-ray shelf? Conan the Barbarian. I got it for $7.
Nice. Hell yeah. It's on mine too.
Original or?
Original? Yeah, the original.
Hmm.
Yeah, the new one is, oh god.
I want to see it only because I like Jason.
You've already seen my review for the new one. You know I liked it.
Yeah.
No, here's my thing with Jason Momoa, and this is hearkening back to our Game of Thrones thing. He's so great when he's not speaking English, because then you can't tell that he's just putting terrible inflections on things and doesn't know what the words he's saying mean or something like that. And then it's just, so if like Conan himself could have just been subtitled the whole time, like speaking in Sumerian talk and everyone else spoke English, I'm sure his movie would have been spectacular.
I completely agree with you, 100%. Well, look,
I haven't seen it. That's just what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm going to just say I disagree about that, about what you think about that movie. Thankfully, this is not the Conan podcast.
I'm a big
Conan
fan.
Until Conan joins the Avengers.
You know what? I'd like to see Conan go toe-to-toe with Thor or the Hulk. I think he could.
He did go toe-to-toe with Thor for one particularly weird what-if.
I don't see how that would work, because Conan doesn't have any supernatural strength or...
But he still kicks the crap out of every demonic creature and god he meets.
Well, let's be honest here, dude. He's a Sumerian, which basically makes him a god compared to normal humans.
All right.
Like, he's at least on a power level. If you just go raw strength and ability, he's up there with Cap.
Okay.
You know, which means that he might not have the durability of Thor, but Thor's going to have one hell of a time trying to hit him.
One of the big things about it was Thor loses his memory, so he teams up with Conan for a bit after they have a fight, because that's in the contract. They have to fight before they team up. And then Thor dies, so Conan takes a hammer. Run for your life.
Wow. You know what I really loved in the Avengers movie?
Hulk trying to pick up the hammer?
Yeah, exactly. Hulk trying to pick up the hammer, and the sheer confusion, I guess, on his face as he keeps trying to lift it, and he's like, why the fuck can't I lift this puny little hammer?
As he sinks
into the deck. And then Thor just kind of lifts it up like it's nothing.
I still think the best part of that whole scene is when Thor's just sitting there waiting for the hammer and the Hulk is approaching, and he grabs the hammer, turns around, bam!
That perfect timing of it. And he's so confident that that hammer is going to get to his hand at just the right moment to spin, turn, and knock Hulk the fuck back into a plane.
And then 10-15 minutes later, they're sitting there and they're all just like, yeah, we just took down this giant alien aircraft space carrier worm thing.
Oh, yeah.
And the Hulk's just like, boom.
Just like sucker punches him in the face. Yeah.
The action sequences in that movie were so good at like raising the hair on the back of your arm. Like, there are just so many gasp out loud moments.
I got my heart pumping. But the best part is still Loki versus Hulk.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my god.
That was so
I told Tom this twice. I almost pissed myself laughing when Loki is standing there just monologuing, "Oh, I'm a god. You people are beneath me." And then stop of his conversation and the obviously CG, like, I think that was probably the worst CG work of the movie, but it didn't matter because it was just so goddamn funny of him like a rag doll slamming Loki back and forth and back and forth half a dozen times and then just leaving him and walking off.
The Thor punch got the biggest laugh in my theater.
Mm-hmm.
Man, no, it was just
the other good laugh that I got was when Iron Man shows up while Cap is fighting Loki in Germany. And he overrides the PA system on Black Widow's jet and just starts blasting AC/DC for his kind of, I guess his entry.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. Because that fits so well into the Tony Stark they've built into the universe of the movies. It was great.
It was pretty great, and the way that they built towards the actual fight between Iron Man and Thor also made a whole hell of a lot of sense. Like, it wasn't just shoehorned in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't like, well, heroes have to fight. That's part of the story. It was like, well, this is organic and actually works. And then, of course, you know, Cap rolls in and he's just like, hey, come on, chill out here. Oh, hold on a sec. I have my magical vibranium shield. Your hammer is useless.
That's what I actually like is how, even though Cap, you know, we all know Cap usually is the leader of the Avengers, and he has a huge role in this movie anyway, but they didn't force it like he's the one standing above them all. And the fact that he's one of the few people that's just genuinely decent throughout it, even when he's pissed off at everyone else, he's still keeping his eye on the prize.
But that's the thing. Cap inspires people to listen to him. When he lands and he's giving the police officers instructions for going into the buildings and setting up the perimeter. Oh, why the hell should we listen to you? Bam, 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 bam. We need to set up a perimeter. We need to send these people out.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Captain America in a way is very much kind of like the Batman of that universe, where it's like everybody
Even
looks
Batman
at him.
Batman and Superman had a love child.
Yeah, exactly. He's like if Batman knew how to talk to people and smile.
Yeah.
You know,
and wasn't an absolute dick.
Yeah. Oh, God. One of my favorite laughs in the whole movie was when they're sitting there at the conference table and Cap's like, I got that reference.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that
was
a great one.
We were talking about that still after we left the theater. Like, I got that.
He's adopted line, too, was. The best part was every character had a line where I laughed out loud. Like, even the Black Widow, like, they were just. They had the great wisecracks and they didn't put it all on Tony Stark, which I thought was.
Which, of course,
it
had the phenomenal, you know, what are you without your suit line?
Yeah.
That's been all over the internet for.
That guy is playing Galaga.
Years.
Oh, yeah. His entrance onto the bridge of the helicarrier was really good.
But he still wasn't the only comedic factor, which I liked. They let everyone be humanized and laugh and stuff, but within their character, too. Like, Thor was obviously...
Loki is my brother. Your brother killed 80 people in 2 days. He's adopted.
Yeah. Right, even Bruce Banner had some sort of, like, quip every now and then. And I agree. That was fantastic. Yeah.
How they said it and what they said was character perfect. And that, I think, is important.
Yeah.
Well, it's like I was talking about this last night with a friend of mine, and I was talking with Misty about it. After we saw the movie at midnight, like right now we have the Avengers and Cabin in the Woods, both Joss Whedon projects, and both of them are looking at these ways serve as these great examples of how Joss has grown up in his post Buffy world, you know, and you have, you know, and somebody has mail. You know, so you have like, you know, Cabin in the Woods, which is him growing up and has all of his trademark Joss Whedon-ness to it, but it's kind of like this darker, more self-aware, almost kind of bitter representation in his work, looking like almost as an essay against, or not necessarily against, but like an essay showing kind of what's wrong with that genre of movie.
And the fact that it was on the shelf for 3 years by the studio makes it even more poignant, I think.
Exactly. And then you have the Avengers, which has, again, still has all the trademark Joss Whedon-ness stuff to it, but it still maintains that youthful sense of wonder and awe. You know, that has that fundamental truth that at the center of it, superheroes should always be fun. You know, I mean, it's just like these are these mythical beings. These are our Olympian gods. They are meant to teach us lessons and so we can better understand ourselves. But at the same time, they are there to inspire us and to be fun and to be amazing. And so many superhero movies kind of fail to do that.
I agree. There's a book that just came out about Joss Whedon, and it's just essays about all of his work. And that was in the introduction. They say that exact same thing, where he wants people to like his work because he's never stopped being part of the audience. Like, he wants to make people feel how he feels when he sees something that he loves. And that really comes through in the Avengers, where he wants everyone to feel excited for the characters winning a battle or cracking a joke, and he completely succeeds on that.
Yeah. Well, it's like one of the mainstays of action movies and things of that nature are these things that are, you know, the fuck yeah moments. Mm-hmm. You know, that moment when you're just sitting there and you might not say those exact words, but when you kind of just like fist pump in the air and you get that huge goofy grin on your face when things work out just perfectly. Like when Banner shows up right there at the last action scene. Yeah, he shows up on the motorcycle, parks it, hulks out, and stops that Leviathan dead in its tracks. Like, moments like that. And Joss Whedon knows that not only are there moments like that where it's just like you get that, elicit that reaction, but you also have the fuck yeah comedy moments. And nobody does those like him.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, Captain America handing the $10 bill to Nick Fury on the bridge.
Exactly.
That cracked me up. That was just, they didn't need words. Just take $10 out of your pocket, hand it over, and that's your eventual punchline for the joke you set up 30 minutes earlier. And it was beautifully done.
Or when they reveal the helicarrier and Banner's like, oh yeah, this is so good.
This is much better.
Yeah, put me on a pressurized metal submersible.
Yeah, and then... did anybody else notice this? That they use the word sentiment a lot?
Yeah. Yes.
Like, that didn't hit me the first time through, but this time around, it was almost like they were saying it every 10 minutes.
There are a lot of little quirks in the script I noticed like that. That was one that bothered me, and there's something that Black Widow said. Oh, the ledger, the red and the ledger thing.
She said that two or three times.
Well, see, yeah. The sentiment thing doesn't bug me because that was just, you know, like I was thinking about that and I'm like, that's just a stylistic thing. That's just his way of getting across like a broader theme. You know, so that wasn't a big thing for me, but it was just, you know, the second time through, I really noticed that they're like, oh, sentimentality, and blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, oh, well, I think that was just kind of his way of saying, like, that is the strength of humans and of these characters, is that they have the sentimentality, you know, they have that desire to stand up for people like Agent Coulson. That sucked.
Or that old man in Germany.
Yeah.
Exactly. Lindsay and I were like ecstatic that Cap arrived just in time to save that old man.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that old man was badass. That he was that example of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good, focused, small scale example that translated well to a larger demographic that, you know.
And it was brilliant how humanity. It was taking place in Germany and he had an older guy that probably had been through the Holocaust or directly after, and like that was really poignant, even though it felt kind of like, oh, it's one of those moments in the movie. It was really done so well that it still grabbed me.
And the first thing I thought too, when they were like, oh, we need to get to Stuttgart, Cap, you're up, and I'm just like, oh god, this is gonna end terribly.
Captain America's invading Germany.
Yeah, throw the American flag in Germany. Yeah, that's gonna be great. But then it was. You know, and it just, damn, that movie was great.
But yeah, with Coulson, I mean, he went out in a spectacular way.
It makes me want to watch the Wash's death scene in Serenity again. Just because I don't remember, like, I remember how he died, but I just want to go back over that again. Excuse me. Go back through that again just for the dialogue.
Well, his was so small. I'm glad that he... Like, obviously, it's Joss Whedon. He was going to kill someone. But yeah, he gave Coulson a really great finale and purpose. It wasn't just one of his, I'm going to kill someone to show the danger of war and how quick people can be taken from you thing. He let him have an out, which is great because he built him up through the movies to where everyone loved Coulson. Like, people were rooting for him and laughing at him. And a couple people around me cried when he died. So,
dude, he was a huge part of the Marvel movie marathon too. He apparently filmed these little intro pieces before each movie for that.
Oh man,
we're still going on the assumption that
he was such a good, fun character that was present all the way through, and you got to like him more and more. And he could stand up to Tony Stark's big mouth. He could. Take care of all of this stuff.
I will not hesitate to tase you and watch Super Nanny while you're drooling in the carpet.
we're still operating on the assumption that Fury wasn't lying when he said
he's dead.
Oh.
You don't tug on people's heartstrings like that and not have him dead and not have him show up there while they're having shawarma after the credits. Like, that's just the kind of thing, like, in something like that, because if they bring him back in one of those other ones, that's just going to be a huge betrayal of trust with the audience.
Actually, I read a fan theory that someone came up with that Coulson, they probably will just add Coulson back into the cast as the movie version of the Vision. I don't like that idea, personally.
Me neither.
Yeah, no, no.
But
although it would save them money on an actor.
Yeah, I don't know. But, like, the thing that I really liked about Coulson is that throughout all of the series, with the exception of the Ed Norton Hulk, the only one he doesn't really show up in, with the exception of Captain America, you know, he is the in for the audience. He is our avatar there. Because of all of the quote-unquote human characters, he is the most normal one. I mean, he geeks out for Captain America. He just sits there doing his job. The even in he Iron handles Man himself 1,
well in a fight.
Yeah, well,
no. During they shot like a Marvel. They had these things called the Marvel one shots that they packaged.
Yeah, funny
on
thing
Thor,
happened on the way Thor's to Thor's hammer. Yeah, with the exception. Yeah, with the exception of that, he really is kind of like that crack for us into that universe, so we can kind of be in there. He is almost that everyman. I mean, even, you know, the initial jokes with him in Iron Man with the whole Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division, you know, yes, it's a mouthful, and he just admits that, and he's just like, and at the end, you know, oh, just call a shield, you know, and it's just, I'm going to miss that.
You know, as soon as you said his geeking out over Captain America, it reminded me of when he was there to take Captain America to the helicarrier and the jet, and he's talking and he's saying, you know, it's nice to officially meet you. I watched you while you were asleep. I mean, I was present while you were unconscious.
I was talking with a friend of mine, and we were thinking. My friend was saying, "Oh yeah, watch." But his last thoughts were, "At least my vintage collection is perfect." And then Fury goes and rubs his blood all over the cards. He's like, "You bastard!"
Yeah, Fury wouldn't have done that if he was alive.
It depends on which Nick Fury you're used to, because I've seen some writers take Fury and play the asshole spy card as much as they play the noble spy.
Yeah. Well, either way, Coulson is apparently dead, or shall I say, in honor of Thor, son of Cole. Honestly, that was just the best way to experience the Avengers, was that marathon.
Absolutely. The way, because each of those movies leading up were really strong. Mm-hmm. You know, each of them had their flaws, but they were all really strong films, and they all, none of them contradicted each other, and then they all tie into this one film. You already have all of the main characters set up, done. You already have all the big backstories. You've already developed who they are and what they can do, and then you put them all together, and you just have fun with it.
Yeah. I mean,
The Hulk still feels disjointed to me, though. The Ed Norton one.
Yeah, that's... You know, when you think about it, though, that the Ed Norton Hulk is the weakest of those first five movies, it's really saying a lot, because that one is still really good.
Yeah, I liked it. I just didn't feel like it tied into the Avengers run. It didn't feel like Iron Man 2, Thor, and Captain America felt like the same cloth. Like, they felt connected, and they felt like they were in the same universe, in the same world. I don't know. The Incredible Hulk just felt like it was...
Well, I think that their connection was a little bit more after the fact.
It kind of goes back to what I was saying, that most of the time, whenever anyone does anything to Hulk, the main thing they always seem to focus on is the whole, you know, the Fugitive style of story that, you know, the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno TV show made so popular to associate with the Hulk. And that's one thing that always bothered me, even though I love The Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton, is that we haven't seen a Hulk movie that did the kind of Hulk comics I used to read when I was a kid, you know, where Hulk was out and out a superhero taking on a bunch of villains to save the world or something. We haven't had a story like that.
Well, he's tough because he's the hero that he spends the entire movie not wanting to be the Hulk. So it's really hard to make an entire movie around him because he doesn't want to be that character.
Yeah, but the potential to play a superhero movie with the ultimate unwilling superhero, but still, once he actually decides to man up and suit up, you know, that's when you know he shows the kind of hero he can be. And that's my whole
There's point. One fundamental flaw, though, with your logic is that comic book fans are obviously the target audience of all of these movies. But for these movies to really make money, they have to draw in a wider audience. And that wider audience, that's what the Hulk is. That guy that's constantly, you know, thumbing it down the road with the ominous and sad piano music in the background.
Yeah, but they have an opportunity, especially now that the Avengers has come out, they now have an opportunity to change that perception and take it in a brand new direction, a fresh direction.
Exactly. That's what they have to do. But now they also have to find a villain that they're going to be able that the Hulk is able to beat up that people
The leader. He was being set up for at the end of the Incredible Hulk, and with the exception of the Fury's big week miniseries comic, you know, we haven't seen much of him. So hopefully we can have the leader actually show up and, you know, be the big villain for a Hulk sequel. Especially because I'd love to see a Mark Ruffalo Bruce Banner talking shit to a big brained mustached psychopath.
I just hope that since they showed the Hulk have some control over himself at the end of this movie, I hope that they continue that through the movies. So it isn't just about the, oh, woe is me, I'm trying to avoid it, that he actually gets to be a hero.
Well, yeah, I also like what they're kind of we're getting at with this movie, where it's not so much that the Hulk is something that Banner really has to control, but it's something that he does control. It's just that he's like he has the other guy. It's like he transitions to the Hulk when he wants to. You know, it's like he has his anger under control, and it's just a matter of, all right, Hulk.
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that the whole reason he hulked out there during the helicarrier was just because he was sitting next to a thing that was just belting out gammas.
And also, big explosion, so he lost control.
Yeah. You know,
when he's in control and he willingly lets himself be angry, that's when we get the heroic Hulk that we all love from this film. And seriously, they better
smile remember. On his face when Cap said, "Hulk, smash." That beautiful grin, and then the wild abandon with which he jumped onto the buildings, and he was just jumping back and forth like a pinball, grabbing those bad guys and throwing them
going
around.
Back and I love that. I
it
love
was
that.
The childlike glee with which he did it that made me grin.
Yeah,
I was like one of the best visual moments, especially because I'm still shocked that this movie wasn't shot in 3D. Just the quality of the 3D. That was in this film. But one of the things that I loved was that sequence where we get to see the camera pan through the city and we see each Avenger, you know, doing their thing, you know, culminating in Thor and Hulk on the back of a Leviathan doing back-to-back Bash Brothers style on everybody.
Oh, yeah. That little, like, spinal tap they gave the giant flying thing was
that
awesome.
That was pretty epic. Man, there Again, were...
Sorry.
I was going to say, as I was going back to wanting to move forward with the Hulk, as I was leaving the theater on Friday early morning, I overheard some people were all like, well, now that they introduced Thanos, I think they should go on to Planet Hulk. And I was just like thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, Planet Hulk, great storyline.
It was.
Yeah.
But not the best film.
But then how are you going to follow? Because World War Hulk came right after Planet Hulk, didn't it?
Yep.
First off, we need a lead-in to Planet Hulk. Like, he has to completely lose it, and then everybody decides that the best way to handle him is to shoot him miraculously into space.
Which is a contradiction of the way he is in the movie.
Exactly.
Right.
Second, there has already been an adaptation of Planet Hulk.
The cartoon
pretty
one,
decent
yeah.
animated one.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was. With the exception of throwing Beta Ray Bill in instead of Silver Surfer. But that you know what? It was still cool. Because I like Beta Ray Bill.
So do I. I was just really surprised that he was
That's
the one
who should be
up.
In the Thor sequel. We need Beta Ray Bill in the Thor sequel.
Yeah, let's give Chris Hemsworth a break and Beta Ray Bill. Bam, there we go. Of course, now everyone who's... But put Hemsworth in all of the ads in about 10 minutes of the movie.
We're going to Metal Gear Solid 2 them.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it. It's time to troll those people. But no.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why we're not allowed to handle movies.
No, but like...
Well, but guys... to be fair, the people, you know, they put out Avengers and they trolled most of the audience at our showing into leaving the theater after they saw Thanos.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I left today afterwards because I really don't think the shawarma thing would have been as funny a second time.
It would lose its impact just because they are sitting there silently munching on it.
I don't know. When I saw it again, I was just like, huh. I just noticed like little things, like the little tiny details. During another time, I noticed like how all of them look like hell except for Banner.
Well, it's probably because Nick Fury was all like, "Yo, Banner, your wang is hanging out here. Have some new pants and shirt." Oh, I saw you coming down.
Yeah,
you're screaming buck naked. Buck naked.
Yes, hello, Harry Dean Stanton cameo.
That was great. I love that guy. But yeah. Oh, did anyone get the Dark Knight Rises preview before Avengers?
Yeah, hell yeah,
we got. Like, I'm not joking. I think 10 previews leading into Avengers.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Midnight Show, we got Dark Knight Rises, Spider-Man, Prometheus, Brave, Frankenweenie.
Yeah, we got Frankenweenie, we got Brave.
Looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man and Dark Knight Rises. Spider-Man.
I didn't get the Spider-Man this time.
I want to say about Spider-Man, and I know that Ahmed, you'll have this covered. But the one line when he goes up to the car thief and the car thief pulls out the knife and it's, oh no, my one weakness, small
knives.
That to me was such a perfect smartass Spider-Man moment.
That's a funny thing is when I've said this to people, every time I see a new trailer or new anything about this movie, I just keep thinking you do that mental comparison between it and the first movie, especially because everyone's pointing out that's 10 years since the first movie came out, the one with Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire.
The short
and I'm just thinking, the comparison in my head is the original Spider-Man trilogy, it reminds me of the first Batman series, like, you know, the Tim Burton stuff, in comparison to this new one, which is more like the Christian Bale, Christopher Nolan style.
Updated, like the first ones weren't bad.
They were just very comic booky.
They were very different.
This is going to be I really think that this movie, I'm not going to say it's the number one movie of the summer, I mean, but I think it's going to be an actual three-way fight between it, Dark Knight, and Avengers.
Their Friday, their weekend take so far, is the second largest Friday weekend take ever, behind
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, yeah.
Yeah, they might beat Harry Potter and the Dark Knight over this weekend.
I'm just going to say this right now. I don't think that Dark Knight's going to be able to stand up to the Avengers. I don't think Dark Knight is going to be able to stand up to even, you know, the Dark Knight.
The trailer so far has not really been inspiring for me.
I think that this most recent one is the best.
Oh, I totally agree. I was on edge.
And the first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, this is really cool, but it doesn't have the repeat impact that the Dark Knight or Batman Begins trailers had. And I just, like, while I think that the movie is going to be very good,
it's just not going to be as good.
It isn't, because it's just, I mean, the Dark Knight was so perfect.
Yeah.
Call the Batman movies superhero movies, though? I mean, I think the Nolan take on Batman, putting him in with the other quote-unquote superhero movies is really... I don't know. It's sort of a fallacy because it isn't. That isn't what they are. Well, they're crime dramas. They're mysteries. They are.
But I mean, it's just we'll throw it out there under the umbrella of comic book movies.
Yeah,
because of the science fiction elements, the car, the technology.
I'm not going to compare it to the Avengers. Like, I think the Avengers is probably going to be my favorite movie of the summer. It was so much fun. But the Dark Knight's going to be like the drama for me. Okay? Yeah.
I don't think that Dark Knight Rises is, it's just the Dark Knight ended on such a perfect note that they could have just been done. You know, it's just, they could have just left it. and just
I am looking forward to seeing Anne Hathaway moving around in a tight leather bodysuit.
Yeah, me too.
I do like the fact that Nolan has, you know, they're all saying this is the last one, like meaning that there definitely is a conclusion that Nolan's been working towards. And it's like, people on the internet already saying, oh yeah, this is when he's going to die. He's going to die. He's going to die. And I keep saying, why would the title be Dark Knight Rises then?
Because he comes back from obviously getting the shit kicked out of him by Bane and then beats up Bane and dies. There we go. Done. Bam.
I do like that in this recent trailer, they've been starting off the title screens, or the word screens, with Faith is broken. And like,
hope is when fire shall rise.
So it's like, Faith is broken. Is Faith the name of Bruce's spine? Because that's what I want to see.
I honestly think they're going to kill him. I mean, just from Nolan's other films, the way that he builds stuff up and his three-part take on movies, I really do think he's going to kill him off.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's going to kill him off. I just think Bruce is finally going to come clean about who he is to the world and, you know, retire.
I think he dies and Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character takes him.
I can't see him killing off Batman.
That would be too horrible. Retire him, but not kill him.
No, but see, it's not terrible because, in all honesty, like every Batman fan knows deep down that eventually Batman is going to die. You know, it's just, especially given the criminals that he goes up against, you know, on a, you know, monthly basis, between Two-Face, Bane, Killer Croc, Scarecrow. Yeah. The Joker, I mean, especially the Joker, just because one day, I mean, like the Joker, yeah, the game for him isn't about killing Batman. It is about fun. But he's going to take that fun too far one day, and it's going to end up with both of them getting killed.
To be fair, that's every superhero when we get down to it. Eventually, none of them are going to die peacefully.
Well, no, Superman's not going to die. It's just not going to happen. I mean, even though he did, but he's not going to die. I mean, that's why his death was so poignant, because he's Superman. He can't die.
Then they had to bring him back and ruin the whole thing.
Yeah.
The only thing that died in Superman and in the death of Superman was death as a concept.
Well, let's be honest, though. At least Jean Grey's still dead.
Thank God.
Yes, and Cyclops is having sex with Emma Frost on top of her headstone.
Yeah,
that was troubling.
I gotta wonder if she turns diamond while that is going on. Would that just be really painful for everyone involved,
or really smooth? I mean,
in a recent Uncanny X-Men, she got her diamond arm knocked off, and she's just like standing there, and they're all like Emma, and she looks down, and like her arm is like missing at about like halfway through her bicep, and there's her diamond arm on the ground.
Is that when they're fighting Sinister, and like Sinister he has his like whole new plan starting up?
Yeah, he uses one of the Celestials to turn everyone in a small area into miniature versions of himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, when did Mr. Sinister become like, cool?
That's not a hard question.
I enjoyed Mr. Sinister as a villain during the X-Men cartoon, the Saturday morning cartoon back in the
90s. Yeah.
I kept thinking of him as Tim Curry from Rocky Horror Picture Show when I watched that.
No, he had a very Tim Curry look to him. I'll say that.
That was just, it was a little unnerving. I thought he was going to sexually assault someone.
I could totally get behind a campy Mr. Sinister movie with Tim Curry as Mr. Sinister. A live action.
I can get behind Tim Curry in just about any movie.
Yeah.
Here's a kicker for me about, just because we're now on X-Men. Yeah, I always find it funny that in the X-Men books, the X-Men have become assholes more and more.
Cyclops' X-Men have become assholes because Cyclops himself has become a grade A douche.
Dude, yeah, but, Wolverine.
Yeah, but it kind of goes back to that line. It kind of goes back to that line from Ultimate Spider-Man where Spidey just snaps and starts screaming at all the X-Men. He goes, you want to know why everyone hates you? It's not because you're mutants. It's because you're all assholes. You're an asshole. You're an asshole. You're an asshole. Like, Colossus is like, why am I an asshole?
Well, it's like right now you have the Uncanny X-Men, which is, you know, the Extinction Team, as Cyclops calls them. Now, that's a great PR name right there. The Extinction Team. And then you have, you know, Wolverine and the X-Men, which is like all of the fun.
Yeah. The classic X-Men.
It's just, in Wolverine and the X-Men, it's just like, every issue is like, yeah, they have those moments where they're taking it very serious, and but it's just broken up with like that Whedon-esque style of fun and wonder and comedy.
Yeah, I read through Schism, and I read through some of Uncanny X-Men post-Schism,
mm-hmm.
but then I just lost interest in Scott and his douchey ways, and Wolverine and the X-Men, to me, is the X-Men right now, and it's so much fun.
Oh, yeah, because like, you have characters like Brew, who's this little brood who's rational and intelligent and all
and
this.
And wants to marry What's-Her-Face.
Yeah, and it's just... completely just so fun.
Yeah.
You know, but he's still a brood. You know, and then you have Kid Gladiator.
Oh, he's just a dick.
Yeah, but he's so great.
And Kid Omega is...
Oh, he's hilarious.
He's really funny, even though he's such an ass, but he wants himself to be the big threat that everyone knows about and pays attention to and is afraid of.
Yeah,
and
he's just that teenager that's lashing out, which is hilarious. And oh, there's this great bit in Wolverine and the X-Men where him and Wolverine are going to this extraterrestrial casino so they can continue to run the school. And he's having, you know, Kid Omega like monitor everyone's brains and all that stuff. And It ends with them escaping, and somebody uses a like matter destabilizer thing, and it like fucks up Wolverine's legs.
Huh.
And the issue ends with like Wolverine lying down in the back of like the space shuttle, and you know, Kid Omega's just like, you probably don't want to look down. I gotta find that issue somewhere. But no,
I was so pissed off. God.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't like. They show like some bits from like the beginning of the movie, and then apparently like one of the Expendables gets killed, and then puts them on their like road to revenge against Jean-Claude Van Damme. And all of the shots from later in the movie they were showing off had this Asian woman in it, and I'm just like, yep, Jet Li dies. But apparently Jean-Claude Van Damme has like 500 pounds of plutonium that he's trying to like. Sell to blow up the world or something. I don't know. It's an Expendables movie. I'm not really expecting it.
Yeah,
the story is not important. It's all about the action.
But there's a great bit in it where Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis are trying to get away from something, and the only vehicle that they could get was a smart car. And Bruce Willis is driving his little smart car, and Arnold Schwarzenegger tries to open it up, and he just rips off the door. And they're sitting there bantering back and forth, like Arnold Schwarzenegger's all like, you know, oh man, you know, I have shoes bigger than this, and blah 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 blah. And then Bruce Willis finally just has enough with it. And he's like, can you just fucking shoot something?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys see the G.I. Joe trailer as well?
No, but I saw it online. It looks a hell of a lot better than the first one.
It just looks so strange, like a completely different film and genre. Good. Like, doesn't even look like the same goddamn canon.
Good.
The only thing that looks the same are Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes, but that's just because there's only so much you can do with both of them.
Right. It was just real. It was an odd preview. I don't know how I felt about it.
And Cobra Commander looks like Cobra Commander. Fuck yeah.
And Bruce Willis showing back up, though. Like, what the hell?
You know what? Who cares? He's Bruce Willis. The guy is who knows how old and is still awesome. And as my wife just said, totally dope. You know, and he's shooting Die Hard 5 right now. And I don't care what people say. I loved Live Free or Die Hard.
Never saw it.
If you watch the director's cut, you actually get to hear him say, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. But the PG-13 cut is still pretty good.
Yeah, I'd have to opt for the director's cut. It doesn't feel like Die Hard unless he says it properly.
Yeah. And Justin Long strangely did not detract from the overall experience of the movie.
All you could say. He didn't detract from the film.
Dude, Kevin Smith was in it, and Kevin Smith is great.
I like Justin Long, though. He's Justin Long. He's really funny. I mean, did you ever see Zach and Miri Make a Porno?
Yes, actually.
His cameo as the gay porn star in the beginning with the ridiculously deep, gruff voice. It was hilarious.
He was amazing in Dodgeball.
Yes.
And Mary Elizabeth Winstead is also in Live Free or Die Hard. She's great.
Anything else, Avengers?
I was about to say, I think we just had a great spot to end the show right there.
I have to say, the fact that they put Wesley Wyndham Price from Buffy and Angel as Thanos, apparently.
What?
Because he's in the credits as the other, quote-unquote.
Dude.
Which I cannot, and IMDb says it's Thanos. Huh. So...
I IMDb'd that guy after watching season 3 of Buffy and was like, man, I wonder where in England that guy's from.
Yeah.
He's not from England at all. He's from Salisbury fucking Maryland.
His regular voice is so annoying and whiny and, like, it's terrible.
Well, have you ever met somebody from Salisbury, Maryland?
No, I'm not.
I grew up on the opposite side of the bay from Salisbury. You don't go to Salisbury.
Is that like a New Yorker not going to Jersey?
Not really. It's like Maryland is set up into some, like, I would say, like, four very distinct regions where you have, like, the northern panhandle, stretching over into about the eastern shore, which is very kind of redneck. You know, because they're right on the south side of the Mason-Dixon line. I think they have to compensate for being that close to the north. Then you get, like, the Baltimore to, like, D.C.-ish kind of area that kind of encapsulates parts of Annapolis. And that's, like, the very kind of, like, the really left-wing, Democrat, rich, also urban kind of stuff. And that's kind of weird. And then you have, like, the area where I grew up, which is, like, the southern counties, which is made up a lot of the people that drive to D.C. every day for work, and then the families that have been there for almost 300 years, which my mom's family is actually part of. So that's kind of cool. Like, I can trace my lineage back to pre-Revolutionary War. And then you have the Eastern Shore. They're just like that part of the state that we all just kind of like acknowledge as part of it. And they have that one thing that we all need, Ocean City, which is like the one beach town in Maryland for the most part. And the rest of it's just kind of like written off. We don't really care about it. It's all flat and boring.
Well, now they've got their claim to fame in the Avengers movie.
Whatever. I just said... the Western Shore has Tom Clancy.
No.
Sorry.
You're talking about Junior, right? Because arguably the better of the two.
Well, actually, there.
Actually, yeah. You know what? The second is obviously the best of them.
Right. Yeah. And he is actually Junior. And then I think I come in at third. Oh.
You could be Tom Clancy the Zero.
Nah, I'm fine. I'm fine being third behind my dad and my grandfather. Mm. But no, so it's just like, yeah. So we're on season 7 of Buffy. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I'm almost done with that show.
God damn, yeah. It got it. Yeah, yeah.
The love for that show is just plain old gone.
I am a Joss Whedon fan. I own and have seen everything he's ever done or read everything he's ever written, and the last two seasons of Buffy were a fight to get through. It was really sheer loyalty at that point that got
me season
through.
6 he kind of like, there were a lot of pretty good episodes, like the trio, they were a great villain for that show because they were funny.
Were those the three little nerds?
Yeah,
I remember
they
them.
Were great up until Willow decided to go batshit crazy and rip the skin off of one.
Well, they gave a different producer the reins, because that was when Joss went over and made Firefly, and then kind of saw what the hell mess they made of season 6 and tried to find a way to get people to pull it together. But I think he kind of lost control of the show in 6 and 7.
Yeah. But yeah, Evil Willow, I just can't buy it. But the whole like Xander saving the world thing, though, that was just like Misty and I were just like, yep, he's a badass.
Hell yeah, he is. Well, I'm hoping that Joss Whedon, now that he's successfully kicked the shit out of so many other movies and he's got, you know, might have the biggest opening and et cetera, et cetera. Hopefully he can get some shit that he wants to make done now.
Word.
I really hope that, I mean, obviously he'll get the sequel to the Avengers, but I want to see him do the Wonder Woman film he wants to do and make crazy shit like Cabin in the Woods. And
I don't think he's gonna get to. I don't think he's gonna get to do Wonder Woman. I think that Disney and Marvel are gonna keep him so tightly contracted to them, but he's gonna get to do whatever the hell he pleases in the Marvel universe.
Well, that's great too, because his run on X-Men, I love it, and yeah, this could be real good.
It could be. I mean, it's just, and then he can bring in the people that he likes and the people right. that he's worked with that have been great over the years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and it, you know what? Hell, give Pixar some characters. You know, like hand Pixar some people and just be like, here, go.
Let Joss Whedon do the Incredibles sequel.
You know what? I'd be fine if they never make an Incredibles sequel as much as I would absolutely love to see one.
But if they do one, hand it over to Joss Whedon. That's all I gotta say.
You know what? Leave it with the people who did it because they did such an amazing job with it. Not saying that Joss couldn't also do an amazing job, but you know. Yeah. So next year at Iron Man 3?
Yes. And then I think then it'll be Thor and then Captain America again.
And then hopefully we're into Avengers 2.
They talked about
Hulk at some point.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson says she wants to do a Black Widow movie, and they seem to have set that up, like a Hawkeye Black Widow combo film, maybe.
If they're gonna do like if either of those two characters were to get their own movie, I would go for Hawkeye, if only because I think he's a bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've never cared for either one of them. I hope they don't give them movies because I want this. I want to have this universe they're building around the Avengers and the Avengers members as something that I like every part of, which I do, and I'd like it to remain that way.
Exactly, and it's just they're great supporting characters, those two.
Yeah, they don't need their own features, though.
No, there should be another Hulk movie, because Mark Ruffalo was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
He stepped into that. You know, with all of these people who are already defined as these characters and then had to follow up on Ed Norton. Like, that's tough for anybody.
Well, Ed Norton's a fantastic actor.
Exactly. Yes. And a Marylander. but see where it all comes back.
He's on for, what, 6 movies, so you got to think at least 2 or 3 Hulks now. I mean, that they're going to or they're going to just add him into the other movies surrounding it. Like maybe he'll end up in Iron Man or end up in a Captain America or something.
But I can see him ending up in Iron Man 3. First off, because of that connection that he and Tony Stark had because of the intelligence, and then obviously driving off in the Acura. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can see him like maybe coming on and working at Stark Industries in a research position.
Probably somewhere very far away from a city and a large population center.
I don't know about that. I don't think Tony would be too worried about it.
Yeah.
He seemed like really open to helping Banner learn that control and that integration of Hulk and Banner into one person.
Oh, I just got reminded of this. Misty, my wife, is from Wisconsin. Sorry, just going off.
Hey, me too. Tell her.
Hey, cheese.
Oh, whereabouts? Whereabouts?
I grew up in Janesville, a little south of Madison.
Oh, okay. Misty's from Racine.
Oh, crazy. Yeah.
So, but apparently, Mark Ruffalo is from Kenosha.
Yep.
So we have now had a Maryland and a Wisconsin Hulk. So it is like we are now married through Incredible Hulks.
Well, and they were the two good Hulks, you know?
Well, Bono wasn't bad. It's just that his movie was bad.
Yeah.
It was just weird.
Like, if they had put Eric Bana in either of these, I think he'd have been great.
I'm not a huge fan of him, though. Like, in general,
Well, I don't
My
think
main issue with the Star Trek movie, for example, was Bana's acting as
He was so
Nero.
Good,
though. Some of his delivery I really hated.
Yeah, I can kind of see that, but I thought he was pretty brilliant in the role myself.
I'm okay with him. I think he's a decent actor, but he didn't play Bruce Banner. Like, he just couldn't do what Ruffalo did.
I think that was Ang Lee not understanding the Hulk. I think that was the main problem with that movie. I think that, like, if, you know, all those years ago they said, hey, Joss Whedon, we know that in 2012 you're going to make the greatest movie ever. make The Incredible Hulk for us with Eric Bana and Jennifer Connelly and just do something great. And he'd be like, okay.
I think the issue is that they tried to make it an artistic, critical film, and they wanted to make an Ang Lee superhero movie. Hey, everyone, superheroes are cool, and everyone can like them. And it didn't succeed at that, but Iron Man did.
But that's the thing is, like, superheroes succeed because of what they are, right, not because you have to make them artistic. You know, I mean, there's a reason why some of these characters have existed for almost 80 years.
You have to know how to play the character and the gravitas that goes with that character. And Ang Lee tried to go too far, whereas, like, Christopher Nolan has nailed Batman. And
he got the psychology of the character perfect.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, Joss Whedon hit Captain America perfectly with this kind of Man Out of Time thing, and I'm really excited to see where they go from there with it. And, like, they hit Loki and Thor as a brother, but that's what makes it appealing to the masses, not trying to make some artistic statement turn comic books into Brokeback Mountain. It's just not going
to
help.
Yeah.
Sorry to turn it into this, but you're saying that Christopher Nolan nailed Batman and Joss Whedon hit Captain America?
Well.
And then complaining about...
And then hit Thor and Loki as brothers.
And I brought in Brokeback Mountain, so I think you see where this is going here.
So basically what I'm hearing is we need Jake Gyllenhaal as Superman.
Yeah.
Oh God! That I think I just threw up my mouth a little bit.
Oh. No, but honestly, the only thing that makes me sad moving forward with all of this is that Kenneth Branagh isn't coming back for Thor 2.
Oh, has he come out?
No, he got ousted.
Oh.
He didn't want to do it that quickly, I thought, was the problem.
Yeah. Which, you know what? Whatever. He made a great movie. Give him the extra year that he needs. It's not going to throw off the Avengers.
Yeah.
You know.
I guess, you know, move up the Captain America movie or something. I thought Thor was real good. It wasn't amazing, but I still got a huge kick out of it. And I watched it again the other day, and he did a fantastic job for a superhero film. Right. You know, Kenneth Branagh, who would have thought? And I would love to have seen him go back to it.
And you know what I loved seeing in Avengers was... when Thor was preparing to fly, you know what he did? He started twirling the hammer. Each time.
He didn't.
But yeah, but I loved that. I mean, because that's how he flies. He spins the friggin' hammer and then he flies.
He throws it.
Yeah.
And he just gets drug along behind it.
Yeah, he doesn't really fly like Iron Man flies. He doesn't have control over it.
Well, see, I thought because Thor has control over the storm in its entirety, I thought that he, like Storm from X-Men, controlled the wind and was able to control his flight that way.
And telling Ray Park what happens to Toads when they get struck
by lightning. Same thing that happens to everything else.
God, that was just terrible, that individual part.
I blame Halle Berry for that. I honestly, it was the delivery. Because I heard Joss Whedon deliver that line as it was meant to be. I forget where the hell it was, some interview, and it was much better. Not fantastic, but better.
Well, then it's not Halle Berry's fault so much as Bryan Singer's for not getting the correct, the right reading out of the actor. Yeah. You know, not to say that Bryan Singer is a bad director, because he isn't. He's amazing. And I thought that his Superman Returns was great.
God damn it, I agree too. I wish that they would have kept on with that. And I loved Brandon Routh as Superman.
The problem with Superman Returns is that the fans of Superman who were going because, yay, Superman movie, and they understood that he doesn't have to have a knockdown, drag out fight, that there's more to Superman than that, and that Lex is a good villain for him. Most of the common moviegoers, though, go to Superman to see him be a brute as far as the fight is concerned, and it didn't have the action element that I think most people were looking for.
At the same time, though, we've really only had one good knockdown, drag-out fight in a Superman movie.
Yeah, with Zod and Ursa.
Yeah, and his lieutenants. And we do need another one. Hopefully Snyder can deliver on that.
I'm looking forward to Snyder's Superman.
But seeing as it's being written by a Nolan, I have a feeling it's going to be like about 2 seconds worth of actual fighting and then a whole bunch of quips back and forth is like Zod is all like, no, I don't want to kill you. It's just I'm like a dog chasing a truck. And you know, and that's pretty much what's going to happen. And I'm going to be all like, wait a second, when did General Zod become the Joker? And now I have to worry about this guy committing suicide with pills. And
no, you know. I think that it's going to end up being really good. I at least I hope it will be. I can't say I think, but I hope.
I'm worried by virtue of the fact that that movie has been shooting for almost a year, and it's still over a year away.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold out hope because they can't seem to do a good Superman since Reeves. You know that, and those movies were so great. I don't know.
The exception of Superman 3 and 4. Yeah.
Well, okay. I meant 1 and 2.
Well, and even 2, unless you're watching the Richard Donner cut, had some really questionable elements. Like that Superman shield that he threw, and yeah, it grew into cool. the little plastic thing. The Richard Donner cut of Superman 2, and then the first Superman. Okay.
Yeah.
Everything
well,
else.
Even looking at the first Superman, oh, I'm going to spin the world backwards because that'll turn time back. But, you know, it doesn't matter because it's fun, and it's a comic book movie, and...
Well, and it's the kind of thing that Superman would have done pre-Crisis anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like back in the 80s, that just would have been like, oh, yeah, totally. Pfft, let's do it.
Then he would have been capable of it. And I don't remember if he ever did, but I imagine he may have at some point.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing, like, DC needs to do moving forward is, regardless of how good next year's Man of Steel turns out, make it a one-off. And that's it. And then reboot the fuck out of everything, New 52 it, whatever you have to do. Build a cohesive universe. And then your marquee players, the people that you have to have good to go before you make a Justice League movie are Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Green Lantern.
I would kill for a good Wonder Woman movie. I'd
kill for a good Green Lantern movie.
Well, I'd throw Flash into that, too.
Yeah. Oh, god damn. Yeah, Flash. And then, because they're making the push with him, Cyborg.
Oh, god.
Like, have you noticed how hard they're pushing him in Justice League?
Yeah, here's the thing. Cyborg, to me, has always been more of a Teen Titans...
Or a super friend?
Or a super friend kind of thing. He's not Justice League to me. Just like the 90s Justice League during Death of Superman was not the goddamn Justice League.
Even though they had, what, the Martian Manhunter in disguise as the black guy?
Yeah, as Falcon.
Yeah, or no. Falcon is Avengers.
Hawkman.
No, yeah, Hawk. No. They had, no, it no, was, the it was black like, guy was something guy Falcon.
Oh, God. I know, because he has, like, the red and white outfit. I know
exactly yeah, with the black cape.
Yeah, fuck. I don't.
Yeah, because there was that great bit where, like, Blue Beetle is like, oh, no, and so-and-so is... And then Doomsday kills him.
Which that would have had more impact if I had paid any attention to the Justice League comics leading up to it.
Yeah.
But that whole sequence of the Justice League fighting Doomsday, every time I reread Death of Superman, I skip it.
Now, if it had been like the real Justice League fighting
Doomsday. Oh, Spirit. Was it Spirit? Is that his name?
No, I swear it had Falcon in it, like Blood Falcon or something.
Bloodwing?
Maybe it was Bloodwing.
Yeah. Oh, man, the most recent, or Justice League number 8. Because that's the thing that depresses me right now, the current Justice League run, is that there's no Martian Manhunter. Because, I mean, he's always been, like, he's been one of those guys.
He has to be in it, I think.
Yeah, well, he showed up for 3 pages of this one. Towards the end, because they're all the like big point about this issue is they're all like, yeah, the Justice League has never expanded their membership. They've never invited new people in. And then the League is all like, well, you know why we don't do this. Like Batman's always reminding him because of that one time. And then it shows this like battle between the entire League versus the Martian Manhunter, and the Manhunter's winning. And then it like it's just like this big two-page spread of that. And then the next page is like a few panels of the Martian Manhunter sitting on Mars being like, they're not ready. You know, but he kind of like runs Stormwatch or whatever, which is one of those books I gave three issues to. And I was like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
I was like, damn it. I just want Martian Manhunter on the Justice League. He just needs to chill out on the Watchtower and like have a happy, fun time and punch Doom or punch Darkseid into the sun, because apparently he's man enough to do it and Superman isn't. Just saying. Sorry, I like the Manhunter, if you couldn't tell.
I'll be right there with you.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's one of the best moments ever. Like, one of the best Manhunter moments is, did you see the DC New Frontier animated movie they did a few years back?
No. I have it. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it's great. They have Jeremy Sisto does the voice of Batman.
Okay.
And it's actually really good, but there's this, that great interchange between him and John Jones, his Martian Manhunter's alter ego, where he's like, Batman's sitting in his windowsill, and he's all like, I have no clue what or who you are. He's like, just know that I have a multi-million dollar, or I spent millions of dollars on a piece of, you know, meteor to keep the one in Metropolis in check. And all I need for you is a nickel to pick up a pack of matches. It's just the look of fear on the Manhunter's face at that moment. It's just so great.
My favorite Manhunter moment happened when Superman went electric blue for a while. And you had the... what was it? The angel leader of the bull host?
Zeruel or whatever?
Well, no, not Zeruel. Zeruel was the eagle host one who kind of filled in for Hawkman. It was Asriel, Asmodeus, or something like that, came down. And Superman hadn't come yet, and so you had Manhunter throwing down against him. And, you know, the touch of the angel was like fire, so it was more damaging to Manhunter than normal, but he was still... like, he was beat the fuck up, and he was just standing there and saying, you will not pass. You know, fuck you. You are not going to fuck this planet up. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to stand here until I die and stop you from passing me. And then, you know, Superman arrives, says, you know, take it easy, and then he starts throwing down and with this demon, or with this angel, and the angel says, you know, kneel, and Superman says never, and then the Flash has this kind of bewildered look on his face and says, this is the guy who said he couldn't live up to his legend. He's fighting a goddamn angel.
That was an excellent scene, yeah.
Well, in that instance, shouldn't Superman have just gotten the complete and utter shit kicked out of him? Because technically speaking, an angel is a being of magic, or what passes for magic in the DC universe, and that being his big weakness, aside from Kryptonite.
Was magic Kryptonite his weakness, though, when he was in the electric mode?
I don't
think his whole power set and weakness set changed at that point.
You know what? I write off his electric mode because that was stupid. And how was that in bed for Lois Lane?
It got rid of the mullet. It got rid of the fucking mullet. That's I was happy with that.
Whatever, man. Everybody has to have a terrible mullet phase, okay?
I never had one. I had the, what was it called? The tail. A little tail thing that was big in the 80s.
Yeah, I think
that was even worse.
Mine never grew too long, though. A classmate of mine had one that was like 3 or 4 inches. And we were all jealous of it when we were kids. But mine would only go about an inch down.
I just think the movie Jesus Land, the documentary that is actually pretty awesome, one of the main kids they focus on has the longest rat tail I've ever seen. And it's just terrifying that people still do that to their kids.
Yeah, but the kids want it. So that's, you know. Well, at least I hope they do. Or else that's just mean parenting. Oh, man. I think we need to have a Martian Manhunter episode at some point, because apparently we all just love the hell out of that guy.
Oh, he's awesome.
Like,
we should. You know what we should do? every time we end up talking about comic-related stuff, we run an hour and a half, 2 hours, something like that.
Split it into two episodes?
Well, at this point, we'll just have an extra XL episode, but either do a separate podcast about comics and then our normal one about everything else so that we can keep, I don't know.
There's
so much content we could do. You know, maybe Bunny Hop every other week is one thing and every other week is another thing.
So what I'm hearing is that we still have several comic book movies left this year. So we're going to make 400 podcasts this year?
Probably.
Because that's what I'm hearing here.
Are you complaining?
No.
Oh, there we go. Okay, cool.
You know, if there's a microphone and something recording, I will talk forever.
Forever.
I like the sound of my own voice.
Because, I mean, I can kill the recording and then restart it, and then you can just keep talking if you like.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I can always just record it here at home. In fact, for all you know, I do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, although, I'm really sad because I was going to do a Mimosa Tavern this week, but I couldn't because I was too tired from all of the movies I saw on Thursday.
Oh, God, by the way, you're going to have to shoot me a real ID request on WoW because I'm in the beta now for Pandera. So,
okay. I would ask you for all that information now, but I don't think we want that out in the podcast.
Here, let me do you a favor. Yeah. This has been episode 28, Avengers Assemble. You can find us on iTunes under Marooners Talk, facebook.com/MaroonersRock, at Marooners_Rock on Twitter, and on our website, maroonersrock.com. Have a great week.
Oh, lovely. That's
the way to do it.